Hello, everybody. The following is a recorded discussion of Daily Maxims and More for January 31st, 2011. Today, instead of discussing Maxims, Chap Raymond provided us with information and answers to questions in regards to the Declaration of Intent to Assemble and Adhere to the Standards of a Jurist and the Declaration of Sovereign Rights Held by Indigenous Power. Hope you enjoy.
Okay, today we're going to discuss the ins and outs of these two documents that people are signing when they join the de jure government of Texas, or the actual it is, they're joining the first estate, the people on the land who have all the power, those who are the source of the power that's delegated to the state, delegated to the county, and some delegated to the national. So, best way I know to handle this is to just look at it line by line and indicate, you know, why it's there and maybe where it came from. But in the case of the state of Texas, when we have two declarations of independence, one is the original one from July 4, 1776 in Philadelphia. And the other is the Texas Declaration of Independence of March 2nd, 1836. And we have here another statement that's sui juris, of one's own right. Now, this is the secularist way of handling having an implicit or embedded authority. Now, those who are into or have religious thought beliefs and think about the Bible as a law book, the right comes from the Creator. Now, in this Declaration of Sovereign Rights Held by Indigenous Power, that's another way of saying from within yourself, indigenous within. First sentence, in the beginning, Almighty God created all men and women with equal rights, that they are created with sovereign rights held by indigenous power, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. They used to say that unalienable, and it's really unalienable. Now, first let me comment about unalienable. That right cannot be taken from you, nor can you give it away. It is unalienable. So many of the rights that we kind of go around thinking we can sign a contract and transfer, really, in fact, shouldn't be treated that way. And there's just the recent realization that, oh my goodness, you can't even give that right away. Not only can someone not take it, you cannot give it away. Now, which is a restriction on your rights, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that they are created with sovereign rights. Now, there's no indication in this document of what they are. And the sovereign rights are that which exists. Picture yourself standing on earth as the only person, the only human. And the whole earth is yours. Now, what is it that you cannot do? What restrictions are placed on you other than the laws of nature? The scientific laws like gravity, and I can't get halfway around the world in a second. But right where you are, there's nothing, nobody to tell you. Now, there might be a cliff right in front of you, but there's no one telling you you can't climb it, or no one telling you you shouldn't. So when you're sovereign, you stand there. Now, from the theological point of view, you are the individual that speaks to God. It turns out that in our history, ever since Jesus walked the earth, a great deal is handled in that manner, in that not only was everyone who was in his camp allowed that privilege or that capability, but eventually man himself began to decide, well, you are the one man who is free to talk to God, and that's how they made kings. So the king became the one with the sovereign rights. And there was only one man in his domain then with those rights. So now when you can see the multiplicity of our situation, we're saying every man and every woman have the equal rights, and they are sovereign rights, and they're held by indigenous power and endowed by their creator. Now, the next sentence, a free and independent state is established when one people join together in a common unity to secure their natural God-given rights and sovereignty. Now, notice the key phrase here is to secure. To secure their sovereignty and right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, to be exercised by elected officials as surrogate power for the free and independent state. Now, this is correct in what they're saying, in that the sovereigns can join together in a common unity or by compact. Now, it could have been an oral agreement at one point, but as we become more and more larger and larger, it gets better to have it written down in words so that in words on paper so that people's memories don't slip and they misinterpret or it gets twisted as time goes by. So common unity is the creation of groups of men to be responsible for taking care of these special aspects of human life. They want to secure their sovereign rights, their liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that a few men say, okay, we will agree to be servants to the rest of you. Not masters, servants to the rest of you. And our duty will be to use your combined power, which you have provided us and which we manage, to protect your life, your liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that is the basic driving forces that brought all this into being. Now, as time goes by, you know, the rules get clouded and the real principles and the underpinnings become more remote, and people think only in the details of how they're doing their work. And that's when obfuscation occurs. That's when usurpation can occur. But basically, a government is a committee, well-organized, well-polished, that is put together by other men than the men who are in it. One observation here is when they reference here surrogate power. Let me read that last sentence again. To secure their sovereignty and right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, to be exercised by elected officials as surrogate power for the free and independent state. The elected officials truly have more power as sovereigns before they were elected. When they decide to accept the election and take the oath of office, they are actually consenting to restrict their powers and limiting it to those which are defined by the establishing document, the Constitution, etc. So servants in the government are truly that, servants. They must usually ask everything they do whether they have the right to do it, the authority to do it. And they get their authority from the people.
Has it ever been like that?
What do you mean, has it ever been like that?
Our elected officials asking to do something or having less power as an elected official than they do as a sovereign.
In the beginning. Now, let me tell you, I assure you that's way in the Texas de jure government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I was doing, when I just said asking, it wasn't asking the people each time they wanted to do something. It's asking themselves whether that which they are to do, wish to do.
Mm.
For example, in conversations that I have with the governor, we're continually saying, well, it's probably something we shouldn't decide on our own. We probably need to have the legislature review it, and if it's something that's within their power, let them legislate and give us the authority to do. That's the nature of the governance dialogue. To knowing when I need to go to the legislature, and if I don't get it, I can't do it. So it's a difficult thing to describe, but to me, I see it as when you're not in office, you have more freedom than when you are. When surrogate power officials, now I'm going to the second paragraph in this declaration, this is almost something you would find in similar to a Declaration of Independence. When surrogate power officials in delegated power elected officers assume the rights of sovereign indigenous power, and they add the phrasing here as supreme, I don't think they have to go much further than it. That was the governor, and I rejected his phone call. Don't you tell him. When surrogate power assumes the rights of sovereign indigenous power as supreme, the rights of sovereign indigenous power are essentially supreme. So it's saying when they make their duties within the government, at the same and elevate them to the level as the sovereign indigenous power and supreme, the comment here or the sentence continuing says, a free and independent state inverts into a state which usurps the sovereignty of the people, and they, the people, become mere subjects of mandatory conformity, victims of suppression of natural rights and tyranny. Corrupted surrogate power has no indigenous authority of its own. Therefore, I declare by Almighty God and peaceable one people assembly. Now, it's a covenant affirmation. Here's what you, the individual signing this, is going to declare. I am created equal to all men and women with sovereign rights held by indigenous power. I solemnly affirm, publish, and declare. I am absolved from all political allegiance foreign to these free and independent states of the Republic for the United States of America. With a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence in one people assembly, I affirm I am local to Texas, a free and independent state, lawfully settled in whatever county, and they use the word county settlement. Now, this is free and independent state they're referring to here in this the sentence is a little longer. There was a semicolon after state, meaning I am lawfully settled in county settlement. And in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty for our posterity and our free and independent state, I consent to uphold and keep the peace or delegate power of sovereign rights held by indigenous power to the local county settlement and to Texas, a free and independent state, for the lawful protections, freedoms, and rights of the sovereign people in these free and independent states of the Republic, the United States of America. This is your pledge to protect and keep the peace and protect the rights of others, not just your own. This is not a demand that you be protected. This is you declaring you will consent to uphold and keep the peace, and then you'll use your power and delegate it to local county settlement and to Texas. Now, in support of this declaration with a firm reliance on divine providence, we mutually pledge to the sovereign people of Texas our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. By autograph under witness protection, my declaration of cyber rights held by indigenous power is supreme. Now, it's saying, okay, I'm going to delegate some of it. We're going to keep the peace. I'm going to honor the laws that come about as a result of the duty of keeping a peace, which we're going to convey to other sovereign people who are working in that capacity or serving in that capacity. Now, that's this document. Is there anybody that doesn't understand what that is saying? It's both saying you have the power and you're giving some of it away. This whole thing is to me, you know, both sides of the coin. You're claiming the power and you're giving a little bit of it away, and you're making a pledge to your fellow man, to your fellow sovereigns.
Can you discuss the concept of witness protection?
That's an old-time way of describing there were people who saw me sign this, and they're listed here as witnesses. Therefore, my autograph is for real and protected against assault by people who would claim it's not mine.
Okay. May I ask you to please repeat that again? It has to sink in. It's a concept.
It's just why they chose those words. I suspect it used to be used that way in the common law.
And
our de facto corporation government has absconded these words to mean something totally different.
Yes. Okay.
Witness protection and. That's an example of the equivocation. This is saying that my autograph is protected because there's witnesses that saw me sign it.
Okay, I'm going to write it that way.
Yeah, that you generally have to get away from the definitions that have been equivocated because it doesn't help the learning process, that's for sure. You're correct, Will. All right. Does that handle the sovereign? Now,
I have a question.
This is a commitment, you know. You're saying you're going to do it here.
Chaplain Raymond, there's another question.
Yes.
Yes, hi. This is Rick Brandon Sanger. Down where in the block where we fill in the name and everything, the term secured party, yes and no. What is a secured party? And then I'll have another comment.
If you, let me simply answer it this way. If you don't know what it is, say no.
Okay.
It's a highly commercial activity which you would know if you are.
Okay.
It's not simple, and it's not something everyone needs to know. If you don't understand what that means, then your answer is no. It's a UCC filing with a bunch of documents and powers of attorney and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So you would know if you were a secured party.
Okay. All right. Also, I have another comment. I was looking through the California Republic website, and on their form, down in the bottom right-hand corner, they have a place for the seal of the governor. And then for the governor or assistant to sign it.
Which form were you looking at?
This one, the Declaration of Sovereign Rights. It's on the California Republic website.
Well,
their form has a place for two witnesses, and then on the bottom right corner, it has a place for the governor's seal.
That's the result of what I call de facto refuse, or de facto residue.
Okay.
In other words, this comes
from the
covenants. Well, this is the document where you're taking and giving some of your powers away.
Right.
Why is the governor signing it?
I understand. Now I see. Okay.
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 And, in fact, if you look at the top of our document, the governor's seal is on it. The seal of the state of Texas is the governor's seal, according to our Constitution. But that's just a unique condition here.
I was just curious about that.
Okay. But any time, now, it could have been just a notice. If you want to send it in, and he's acknowledging that he was noticed. But the Declaration of Sovereign Rights is yours talking to the universe, essentially. Now, it has to define some boundaries in order to begin to speak in terms of specific governments. So that's why it says I'm local to Texas and settled in a certain county, because it's, the government is constrained to certain boundaries. Not you, the government that you're creating. And you're generally doing it to the government that's over, that includes your location within its boundaries. Okay, any more questions? All right. There's very little, if any, harm. Now, one word I will comment on. Under the covenant affirmation, it says, I am absolved. That word does not appear in the Webster's 1828 dictionary. Normally, we used to use the word abjure, which is, ab means absent, take me out of, cancel, and jure is usually the word that has to do with jural and jural society. So you could say I am abjured from all political, and that would mean you're no longer in any of those. And that's what the sovereign rights is supposed to do. Now, let's go to the declaration of intention to assemble and adhere to the standards of a jurist. This is the general attempt to establish jural societies without calling it that, keeping the people somewhat wandering around and milling around with no specific identity other than their own. We'll come back to that after we read this. I hereby solemnly declare and publish that I am a man or woman, having attained the age of 21 years, created of the Almighty, indigenous to the land, bound by the natural law, and with allegiance pledged to no one. Okay? Allegiance pledged to no one. Never having sworn allegiance, semicolon, or having pledged allegiance in the past, and having, now this is the long or clause, and I'll have to read it all at once and come back to it. Having pledged allegiance in the past and having seen my error, revoked or hereby revoke the same, by and through my inherent and indigenous powers. I declare to the world that I am free and possessed of all my faculties, and that I am local to the, and you name your county, settlement, peacefully and honorably settled in the area described as something County Texas, which I have made my permanent as opposed to temporary abode, and that by the powers aforesaid I declare my intent to assemble and cognize the duties and powers of a jurist. Now, you're agreeing to become a jurist. Now, this is an old-time definition of jurist. It's one that is going to live by rule of law. Then he goes on here and says, a jurist is one that knows, engages in, and will uphold matters of law. A jurist may be called to serve on a grand jury panel or a petit jury or remain in a jury pool as a reserve. Once impaneled and sworn in, a jurist may also be called upon to investigate a crime or may investigate it on his own initiative. A jurist might be appointed to public office or may be nominated for election, and upon being seated upon a jury panel, whether grand or petted, or upon taking a public office, shall be required to give such sureties and covenants to solemnize the conviction of resolve to truly discharge the duties of office, protect the innocent, and charge the office with the authority of law. This is a mixture of time having gone by, and it encapsulates it and says, I really am saying that I'm going to be in a almost a nameless jury society with all the other sovereigns that sign this. Now, we have analyzed these things and come through, and attempting to settle the counties, it became obvious to us that you just couldn't leave it in an ambiguous, indigenous power, you know, people wandering, just not knowing essentially how they relate to each other, that we needed a slightly different definition. And instead of rewriting these to that extent, these are very similar to all the other states. In fact, we took Michigan's to create Texas, okay? So, what I'd like to do now is let's see. Can you see me moving things around? I'm bringing a document up. How many of you are on the telephone? More than Timothy, you still on the telephone?
This is Rick. I'm on the phone. I can't get on the GoToMeeting.
Okay. All right.
I don't know why.
What I'm displaying is a third paper, a third piece of paper that we're getting into at the, when we're beginning to get into the actual formation of self-government bodies within a county. The name up in the heading is the first estate of blank county. Now, this Saturday, that will say the first estate of Parker County. Since it's the first, it'll be unit number one of the Texian Jural Society. And it reads as follows. I, the undersigned, hereby affirm that having placed my witnessed autograph on the attached Declaration of Sovereign Rights held by Indigenous Power and the Declaration of Intent to assemble and adhere to the standards of a jurist, that I am a jurist and elector in the First Estate of Parker County, Unit Number 1 of the Texian Jural Society, that is, that certain society of sovereign souls domiciled on the land described by the boundary of Texas and each Texas county, that peaceably and lawfully assemble in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty for our posterity and our free and independent county and state, and the honor of our county, state, and country, and to provide grand juries within the Texas Jural Society for each county, the state, and national causes of action, to be known as the First Estate, and to provide three separate and distinct Republican forms of government, including one for county, one for state, and one for national. And to these ends do each sovereign soul solemnly and mutually covenant and combine themselves together into a civil body politic for their better ordering and preservation and furtherance to the ends aforesaid. Further, does each sovereign soul solemnly and mutually pledge to each and every other sovereign soul in Texas to come to the defense of any unjust or unrighteous assault or threat, either by direct or indirect acts, on any sovereign soul's life, liberty, or property. And by virtue hereof, to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time, and shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good, unto which we promise all due submission and obedience. I pray that I may always act in a manner that honors all of the above and will ensure that we will always have a lawful, righteous, and just government that truly represents the Texian people, that my purpose and goal will always be liberty by learning to become a better sovereign jurist and a lector, and will to the best of my ability ensure the continued process of electing righteous and just fellow sovereigns to hold the government offices. Sealed this day, and it goes on down to where then this becomes part of the package of three pages that is forwarded to the office of the Secretary of State and recorded. And your return address is included so that the originals can be returned to you. That's one great big long thing, and this is the actual Jural Society or First Estate Compact. This is where you're saying, I'm going to create governments. I'm going to be the power behind the power. The other documents are a little bit general and loose and don't necessarily get there. And it's because of our experience that we accept it or assume that it will happen.
Chaplain Moran?
Yes.
Does this need to be placed on the website yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
So far, you're the first to see it other than Alicia and Al Rice.
Okay.
I'm waiting for some comments back. I don't want to just blast it everywhere. I might have made some serious blunders in there.
Okay.
But we are going to, the term Jural Society has gotten some bad, bad press in the past 30 years because of people not handling it very well. They didn't know how to get out of their contracts before they started trying to create them. And so they had prior commitments which prevented them from being able to do what they did. Therefore, authorities could come and do bad things to journal societies. This led the public impression that they weren't allowed or you couldn't have them.
Well,
so the first estate is that in a series of, there was a Frenchman, Montesquieu, I think is his name, who wrote a book way back, late 1700s. And he defined the branches of government after he had seen what America had done. It came out legislative, judicial, and executive, not in that order, but, and the fourth estate he called the press. Well, everybody has ignored the fact that the power comes from the people. In the European side of things, it doesn't. So it never occurred to them to identify and name the fountainhead of power as the people. So we're taking a little bit of a step here in Texas to make sure that it's in the formal record that the people are the fountainhead of power. And this will be the first time that in the history of our country that's recorded so that it's no longer can be omitted by people who have other desires. Once we can get it into the record in the public domain, such as the Library of County Records, it won't be as easy to get it out of history.
Well, congratulations on this. It's a marvelous, marvelous document.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And
I'm actually awed by it.
So when do I have to go ahead to put it on the website?
Well, if Will said okay, I think you go.
Okay.
I think let's let Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting very fortunate in these things we've got. And the providential aspect of our work, gentlemen, is amazing. I think we ought to stop the recording at this time.
Okay.
I want to say some things.
All right.
Yes.
Are there any questions before we stop? Okay. Well, thank you, Chaplain Raymond.